All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Yatinava Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gaudavan Vacharan Harasisha Sunyavati Pasaka Chavitara. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 14, Text 38. Do the word for word first. Etasmin samsaradavani nana keso parasagarga padita. Badita apana vipano yatra yas tam hu ha pavitasras tatra visrija jatam upadya sochan mukyan bibyad vivadam kirandan samrishyan gayan nayamanam sadhu parityo nivartvatite yapi yata abhadra esa nara loka satyo yam advanaha param upadi santi nana kesa sargam parutitam apana vipanu yatra yastam yahad virastatra vasraja tatam upadiya sochan mukyan vivyata vivatyadan kranda surasyam gayam nayam manana sadhu ritatyati sarvanavarti diyan yatta abradya esa naraloka sarto ham avyanam param upadasanitihi. Try that one. It's a long one. Anybody? Tasmin. On this. Samsara of miserable conditions. Advani, path, nanan, various, plesya, by miseries, upasarga, by the troubles of material experience, existence. Baditaha, disturb. Upana, sometimes having gain. Vipananaha, sometimes have lost. Yatra, in which, yan, thereupon, prishya, giving up, jatam, newly born, upadaya, accepting, sochan, lamenting, mukyan, being illusion, vivyat, fearing, vivadan, having explaining loudly. Krandan, sometimes crying. Samrishyan, sometimes being pleased. Gayam, singing. Nayamanaha, being bound. Sadhu, Vartita, being away from saintly persons. Na, not. Esa, certainly. Avartate, achieves. Adyapi, even until now. Yataha, from whom? Arabhyataha, commenced. Esaha, this. Naraloka, of the material world. Sa artyaha, the self-interested living entities. Yam, whom? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Advanaha, of the path of material existence. Param, the other end, Upadisanti, saintly persons indicate. Translation purport by Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is a long translation. Maybe we'll take it in parts. The path of this material world is full of material miseries and various troubles disturb the conditioned souls. Sometimes he loses and sometimes he gains. In either case, the path is full of danger. Sometimes a conditioned soul is separated from his father by death or other circumstances. Leaving him aside, he gradually becomes attached to others, such as his children. In this way, the conditioned soul is sometimes illusion and afraid. Sometimes he cries loudly out of fear. Sometimes he is happy, maintaining his family. And sometimes he is overjoyed and sings melodiously. In this way, he becomes entangled and forgets the separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead since time immemorial. Thus he traverses the dangerous path of material existence. And on this path, he is not at all happy. Those who are self-realized simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to get out of this dangerous material existence. Without accepting the devotional path, one cannot get out of the clutches of material existence. The conclusion is that no one can be happy in material life. One must take the Krishna consciousness. Please repeat. The path of this material world is full of material miseries and various troubles disturb the conditioned souls. Sometimes he loses and sometimes he gains. In either case, the path is full of danger. Sometimes a conditioned soul is separated from his father by death or other circumstances. Leaving him aside, he gradually becomes attached to others such as his children. In this way, the conditioned soul is sometimes illusion and afraid. Sometimes he cries loudly out of fear. Sometimes he is happy, maintaining his family. And sometimes he is overjoyed and sings melodiously. In this way, he becomes entangled and forgets the separation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead since time immemorial. Thus he traverses the dangerous path of material existence. And in this path, he's not at all happy. Those who are self-realized simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to get out of this dangerous material existence. Without accepting the devotional path, one cannot get out of the clutches of material existence. The conclusion is that no one can be happy in material life. One must take the Krishna consciousness. That sums up everything. Any questions? Purport, by thoroughly analyzing the materialistic way of life, any sane man can understand that there is not the least happiness in this world. However, due to continuing on a path of danger from time immemorial and not associating with saintly persons, the conditioned soul, under illusion wants to enjoy this material world. Material energy sometimes gives him a chance at so-called happiness. But the conditioned soul is perpetually being punished by material nature. It is sometimes said, Danya, Danya Jani Raja Yena Naditi Kubaya. That's Majus, CC Majus 10:21-18. Materialistic life means the continuous unhappiness. But sometimes we accept happiness as it appears between the gaps. Sometimes a condemned person is submerged in water and hauled out. Actually, all of this is meant for punishment, but he feels a little comfort when he is taken out of the water. This is the situation with the conditioned soul. All the Shastras, therefore, advise that associate with devotees and saintly persons. Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Dishtha Koi. Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hai. Madhya 2254. Even by the little association with devotees, the conditioned soul can get out of the miserable material condition. This Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to give everyone a chance to associate with saintly people. Therefore, all members of the Krishna Consciousness Society must themselves be perfect sadhus in order to give a chance to fallen conditioned souls. This is the best humanitarian work. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now, that sums up everything. So, first about the dangers of the material world and the attachments that we have. I can only cite my own experiences, what I've gone through in my own life. It seems that in the beginning, before we join this movement, Prabhupada once said that if I told you what you have to go through before becoming a self-realized person, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't even take the time to go through all these experiences. So it happens that from the very beginning of our life cycle, we have to go through a painful understanding of what life is all about, and a search for what the meaning of all this is all about. So what's all given here in this sloka and the purport applies mainly and totally to conditioned souls, those who are not devotees. So devotees are exempt from all of this just by the fact that you're doing devotional service. Prabhupada says anything you do in Krishna consciousness, any service, is a way by which you avoid the miseries of life. So devotees are placed on a very high platform that once you become engaged in Krishna consciousness, then there's no more search. Ultimately, you found the ultimate and the highest form of existence. So knowing this, that, okay, we've gone through lifetimes, and Prabhupada said millions of lifetimes may have passed before you come to the point where you can accept the spiritual master. So think of that, millions of lifetimes going through all the species of fish, animal, all the gross elements that we have to go through from the microbe. And even in the Brahma Samhita, Śrīla Bhakti Sanat is stating that from that Indra Gopa germ, to Indra and to Brahma, everything is a progressive state of misery. So from the biggest to the smallest, everything is the same thing. It's all based on this idea of enjoyment. Now, what enjoyment can we get out of material energy? Everybody tries. And so in my own life, I remember from the very beginning that I thought I was the luckiest man in the world. My plight, and I'll go into it a little bit, I've never told some of these stories, but it's interesting where I came from. I was born in America in 1939, so you can imagine the years have gone by, so I'm not a young boy anymore. In any case, I had the illusion that everything I did was successful. I was riding high. I was like experiencing everything I took on was a success. I couldn't lose. Whatever I gambled, I always won. And so later I understood that this was the hell I was experiencing, that I couldn't fail. No matter what I tried, I always was successful. So it was a reverse that most people, they get the opposite. But I was successful. I was a famous artist. On the Today Show in America, nationwide, my works were shown. I was a wealthy artist, associating with some of the biggest names in the art world. Salvador Dali, I met him in New York. Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, big names, all these, and this now, they're worth millions and millions of dollars. I was in that association. And there was one art gallery, Castelli Gallery, that made big names just very quickly, just by proposing their work, and all garbage. And so that was New York. I met so many famous people, Cassius Clay on the street, Federico Fellini, Tony Curtis, and all these big name people. Where are they now? All names just all passed away. So from that state of being like successful, I was very daring, and I dressed in very bright clothes and drove a yellow, bright car. And so a very attractive personality, very young, you know, a lot of energy, and what a jerk, completely idiot. And so in any case, all this was going on for the first part of my early life. And then it all came to an abrupt end. I got married. Bingo. Just like that, it all stopped. I took a dive from being the most successful artist to being nothing. And so, go glorious to married life. So that's what happened. And so it was like, you know, so dramatic. Because what happens when you get married, you take the karma of the spouse, of who you marry. You don't realize that. And so I didn't know. But the person I married and stayed married to for all those years, 40 or more years, was a great friend and turned out to be a big asset in spiritual life. So if that happens, Prabhupada said, you're like a sannyas. You're actually, your marriage is something favorable to Krishna consciousness. So therefore, you stay there. So there's been a needling point, a prickering by different people, some famous sannyasis here, about this, the grihastha versus sannyas life. Now, I'll just mention that there was a big thing in 76 in Mayapur, and Tamal Krishna led the sannyasis against the grihasthas. And Prabhupada calmed it all down. We all have to work together. Backbone of the whole society are the grihasthas and the women. The sannyasis are the preachers and those who go out with and do the, you know, the frontline defense and offensive systems. And so we do work together. And ultimately, we don't want to cause a split or derange the society and cut us in pieces. So we live together, work together, and pray together. And the family that stays together ultimately goes back home together. And Prabhupada's got the key to the back door, so we're lucky. And how lucky it is to meet Prabhupada. Because you think, now, if millions of lifetimes we're looking for a spiritual master, a truth and beauty search, we're looking for the highest knowledge available on the human planet. And so, and of all existence that is apparent in our perception, and we're, for of course, faulty vision, and we have the four defects. But ultimately, to find Prabhupada is like, you know, the greatest mercy that could ever happen to anybody on the planet, and we have that. We're devotees. We're here in Vrindavan. We're enjoying the bliss of spiritual existence. And the Bhrigu Samhita gets into this a lot. You know, what happens between Goloka and Gokul? It's a transition. When Krishna was on the planet, it was the exact same thing as Goloka Vrindavan. Exactly. No difference. And so the residue is here. We're in Vrindavan. It's a spiritual world. Now we're associating with each other. Like in Puri, Prabhupada has mentioned up the forearm Vishnu forms. We have no idea who we're sitting next to. Very often pure devotees come here. One time one walked in, came in the courtyard, and the guy giving a class jumped off and ran over and touched his feet. He turned around and walked out. It was Krishna's Babaji. He didn't want to get that kind of notoriety. So he was a Babaji, and he was very calm, but a pure devotee. So into the story of what happens in material life and what happened to me, because I tell the story, it's really funny, most of it. But being young and daring, I did a lot of crazy things. And I passed through many death experiences, near-death experiences. One time I'm driving a car, and it was very late, very early in the morning, like around 2 o'clock, and I fell asleep. And so I'm driving a car, and I'm sleeping. And so all of a sudden, I get these two big headlights right in front of me, right directly in front of the car. And so a time warp, if you ever know what a time warp is, it's a moment where time stops, and there's a twist. And so, Sila Gornitai Kijai Krishna Balaram Radha Shamasan Elite Vishaka Kijai. So that time warp saved me. There was enough time, the car was right there, and it went by. And the horn went by. And I had just enough to veer it off, and I was, when I was seen later, I was looked pure white. I had lost all my blood, it seemed like. And I almost stepped into the lairs of a python snake when we were in Costa Rica in the jungle. And so just by a spare conversation with a young boy who was a tico, you know, local, he had a herd of cows, Brahmin cows, and I didn't think about it at the time, but where do they come from? There are no Brahmin white cows in Costa Rica. And so this Brahmin, this looked like he was a Brahmin boy, but he was tico, he was Costa Rican. He grabbed our attention by his beauty. He just said, who is this beautiful person here? We've never seen that kind of beauty anywhere. And so it was just enough time spent looking at him. And then my wife and I went into the jungle to get down to the ocean. And so this big, huge snake, I thought it was a log, so I was going to sit on it. But it was, it's like, you know, about 10 inches in diameter. And so big enough to really squeeze the living daylights out of you. And it was going by on the path. And the path is only very small, so you can only see this log moving. I said, maybe we better sit here for a minute and just take a little rest here for a moment until it went by. And so it did go by, and ultimately tore off and went straight down to the ocean. And diving off of high cliffs, and one time I dove so close to the cliff that it touched my bathing suit. And near-death experiences, scuba diving, when I'm swimming along, you know, in like 60, 70 feet of water, and a fish bigger than you swims by, and you start thinking, this is the wrong place to be. And this friend of mine, he was a fast-draw gun artist. So I'm standing right next to him, right in front of him. And so he's drawing to show how fast he is with a draw. And he didn't know he had the guns were loaded. And so he shot both the guns, and I was standing, went, all right, almost went right through me, you know, just very close to being shot on the spot. But the mirror shattered, and it was glass everywhere. So I was no flunky. I mean, I was able to sustain myself and be able to get through these near-death experiences, drowning, so many close closet drowning, and so many different things happened. Okay, so all this is like a preparation for becoming a devotee. So finally, in the onset, the way it turned out, we're searching for a spiritual life. My wife wanted it more than me. I was happy. Okay, I'm just painting away. I was a famous artist. I had very rich students. One guy was one of the richest in America. And he was a senator of New York State for some years, a very famous name. And his brother was the chairman of the board of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So I had access. I had access to very high-level people. And one of my students was named Walter Taylor, and he was the heir apparent of Taylor Wine Company, upstate New York winery, a very big name. So all this was going on. And I was searching for what's the highest in truth and beauty. And the highest beauty it could find is the beauty of the opposite person. And so generally speaking, for a man, it's women. And for women, of course, it's man. And then a little side note here while I'm thinking about it, but there's a Gallup poll in America by which men and women are asked, what would animal would you like to be if you had a choice? Anybody here can say what they'd like to be as an animal? What kind of animal would you like to be? Huh? A cow? Anybody else? Well, of course, we don't want to be an animal, so you don't want that. But according to Gallup poll, women like to be snakes. And men like dogs and horses and hogs. So we don't want any of that. Ultimately, we're very happy in our devotee body. We don't want to take a dive into the material pool again. So after the search for perfection, I've written it up. It's a whole book that'll come out one day soon, maybe after I leave. But we had this desire. It was from my wife. She wanted to find spiritual life. I said, okay, take out a world map. So we took out a world map, and I was engaged in this painting, 60-foot mural in this restaurant. I said, okay, if there's a God, let him direct us to a place anywhere on this planet where we can find spiritual life and find a guru. So I closed my eyes, and I came down on the map, and it was Costa Rica. And so it was like 5,000 miles away of unknown territory. It meant going through America, going through Mexico, going through Central America, finally right up to the Panama Canal Zone. That's the place. And so we had to go through all these horrendous experiences, having ripped off everything, having a friend had his head cut off. He was dealing in drugs in Mexico, having so many strange adventures of people on the road. And so finally getting this place with no money. All this happened, you know, without any, you know, it was a big adventure, but this odyssey went through so many different nuances. And when we had no money, we had no place to stay. And ultimately it came down to a point. I just had my mother, my last attachment, you know, in America. So I got a telegram. Finally it came later. We picked it up. It's called home immediately. Your mother is sick. So when I called home, they were all coming back from the funeral. Okay, my father had died, and I touched him. He was like a piece of ice, stone cold, hard as a rock. And my mother now gone. So that meant no material attachments, some family, brothers and sisters, but distant to experiences. Any case, so that ended that. So now there was just my wife and I in the ocean. We had no money, nothing. But we had the ocean. The ocean's free. And so we go for a swim, and immediately we got swept up in an undertow. Now we're outside, away from the shore. We can't get back into land. And further behind us are sharks floating around. So she kept saying, it can't get any worse, and it always did. And she kept saying that tarot deck readings came out, okay, it means now a death card always came up. So it means we've got to die before we get reborn again. So now I'm thinking, okay, I had to go through all this experience to get to the point where we almost died. We could have done that back 5,000 miles back earlier, you know. So then ultimately I looked at her and said, now it can't get any worse. And it couldn't. Finally, we got dragged. I dragged her back into shore. And we're on the just on the shoreline and just for hours just trying to get strength back. And so, finally, you know, we got enough energy to get up further up under a tree, a coconut tree, and clipped away the leaves, and okay, now we have second birth. And just then, a little spot down the beach came bigger and bigger, and it was a devotee. So we had to go through all of this experience to get to devotional service and to meet, ultimately, Prabhupada. And so when Prabhupada came out of, this is a new Dwarka, and Prabhupada came, we had joined in Miami, and 2 weeks later, the CC was just starting. And so Prabhupada was told an artist joined in Miami. And so we were flown immediately to Los Angeles. So I got engaged as one of the artists in the painting, beginning of CC. And then Fate was starting, so we got transferred into Fate. That's an unsung hero story there, because it was equally important to Prabhupada. The books getting printed, 17 volumes in 17 weeks, and fate. The first museum had to be put up as soon as possible. And so we were under a marathon with that. And so the first time I saw Prabhupada was in 1966, walking down the street in Lower East Side. I just happened to walk by him. And I noticed this person with white pointed shoes, and you know, it must have been an Indian. I didn't know what Indians were about. We didn't have many. There weren't many Indians in where I was from. So I didn't know what one looked like. So here was the Prabhupada walking down the street, and I just walked by him. He must have thought, well, this guy's not ready for spiritual life. Let him go by. So maybe later he'll do something. In any case, when he came out of the curtain in the Dwarka, there's curtains there in the entrance. So he comes out, and he looked at me, and so immediately I lost it. You know, millions of lifetimes just melted away, and suddenly there's Prabhupada, the object of truth and beauty, the representation of Krishna on this planet. And then the guy who was walking down the beach in Costa Rica, he appears out of nowhere. He's got a long, long ponytail, Yugadharma is his name. He made us devotees. He taught us how to chant, and he gave us nectar devotion. When I opened the book, there was Prabhupada's picture. Oh, I recognize this person. And so, but that book was effulgent. I mean, the picture was shining, you know, the halo was shining. In the course of years as devotees, I saw Prabhupada's halo more than once. And he wasn't touching the ground different times. I saw that. In any case, Prabhupada paid his obeisances, and the doors opened, and all this smoke come out. All the different incenses were blazing away. And these big, huge figures were standing there, and I didn't know who they were. But this is like, you know, of course, they're the deities in L.A. But then, before this, in Miami, when we joined, we pulled a taxi got us to the door of the temple, and that was just the money we had left, and that was it, nothing more. And so the first guy we start talking, he's preaching to us like, you know, his knees are shaking, he's like, you know, moving, shaking and preaching to us. And so I thought this was a Krishna's incarnation right from the very beginning, just the way this guy was hitting us with the philosophy. So one thing after another, you're not your body. And that, you know, God is so big that pores of skin, universes come out of the skin and seed form and maintain universes, unlimited universes, all new stuff. And so I thought, well, God is big, but I never heard that before. Anyway, he kept preaching to us and giving us the whole philosophy in a matter of a half hour. And so finally we realized he was just a brand new devotee, and he only joined like 2 weeks before. I said, well, how can this be? And so then we had the first Tulsi Artik that we saw. I thought, my God, this is really nice, that we're in a place where they worship the plant. So I thought, okay, these guys got to be okay. And so then we went on Harinam. And I thought, well, I don't want anybody to see me dressed like this, you know, just got a bed sheet on, and I'm chanting on guanavana seeds. You know, it's like a jackfruit. So they take the seeds and we strung them and we japa beads. And so we're on Miami Beach. And so who walks down the line but my next door neighbor? Oh, no, she's going to see me. They're going to recognize me. One of these Aries, oh, no. And so she didn't recognize. She walked by, thank you. And so, of course, it all changed. But that was the first impression. I thought, what are we doing in this group of shaved-headed ones? And so an indication came later when I read Nostradamus' predictions. He said that the shaved-headed ones would change the world. This would happen 500 years from then, which was the time of Lord Chaitanya. They were contemporaries. And he saw Lord Chaitanya coming out of the east as a brilliant sunlight with yellow clothes turning into blue clothes. And that energy, that force, he said, would change the world, and he will be known very liberally after 500 years. So 18, and then that happened. And so then he also saw Srila Prabhupada coming from the east and carrying a effulgent figure, carrying this rod. And so he says he's dressed in rose-colored garments, His words will break the shatter the stones of the hard-headed ones, meaning Germany, because that's where the most difficulties still exist. And his words will be so sweet that it will touch the heart of everybody, and the world will change. From that point, there's going to be major catastrophe in the turn of the century. That was 2000. Expected, you know, with the dysfunction of all electrical devices, the bombs would start flowing. But the Hari Nam changed that, and still in the process that our Hari Nam program is altering in the course of history, because ultimately there's no bombs flying because of the Hari Nam. And so that prediction came that the shaved-headed ones, it mentions twice in the quadrant, that they will change the world. They will preach this message from an old urn, and the urn will be developed into a brand new philosophy, and that's what Krishna consciousness is, the oldest philosophy. So more about Prabhupada. Okay, so then, now we're in a devotional line, and so I understood that now there'd be no problems. We're devotees. Actually, you know, it's going to be great from this point on. No more problems. Then the problems started, even in devotional life, because we're taking the shower. We're all in the beginning of the purification process. So in the early days, I mean, now it's a cakewalk, as they say, that there might be problems, politics, and things going on, but ultimately, in the early days, it wasn't that way. It was like it was heavy. And I mentioned this before. I heard that Prabhupada knew ESP, so I tried it out. And it was in the Fate Studios, and Prabhupada was taking the tour. And so, in my mind, I addressed Srila Prabhupada, and he was nearby from here to the camera. And so, Srila Prabhupada, what is going on in this movement? I said, I thought I'd join a religious organization, but there's so much fighting, so much bickering and criticism, just so much anxiety here. What is going on? And Prabhupada looked at me and nodded, back and forth, the Indian gesture he gave to acknowledge. He heard it. So he says, it came to me in my mind, just wait, in 2 weeks you'll find out. So 2 weeks later, I did find out. There was nobody chanting the Maha Mantra. All the leaders were keeping her hand in a bead bag to keep it warm. And so the hand was just there for a show. But ultimately, they move it and make it look like there's something going on inside. But no chanting. So that meant this provided the problems of our society, because the leaders were not chanting. Ultimately, it filtered down to everybody. So the Prabhupada was asked once, what happens to a devotee when he stops chanting? He may have done many years of devotional service and then suddenly stops. So what happens to him? So and Sasrup gave the same answer later, that a 7 years gap, now Prabhupada's talking about a gap of time when you get happy, some in your melodious, you sing, you're happy, you're having your top of the world, and suddenly, bingo, you're dead again, dead in the water. So a gap of 7 years may take place, and you're still rolling on the punya of the pious credits that you've gotten, from your years of devotional service. So then suddenly it's gone. And then what happens? You're gone. You're out of the material world, or you're back in the material world, out of devotional service. So it's very important that we stay fixed in devotional service and just become, like it said in the sloka, sadhus. A sadhu is one who is very definitely moving in a direction of helping the world. And so in every way possible, that's our mission, to spread this all over the world. And it's beginning to happen. We're now in society, where they're trying to make Bhagavad Gita the national book. And so that would definitely be Prabhupada's book. 850 million books have been distributed to date. 850 million books. And so, it's happening. All over the world, Krishna consciousness is being heard. And Prabhupada said that they have no choice anymore. Wherever you go, there's somebody, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. You can't avoid it. It's everywhere. So Krishna consciousness is taking over the world, and it will take over the world. And Prabhupada says, in the future, are you Krishna conscious? You believe in Krishna? No. Kill him. You said that. Kill him right away. Muslims would do that too. They say that's in their scripture. If you're not a Muslim, kill him. But then Prabhupada was asked by Tamal, is that true? You really wanted to do that? He said, no. Kill him with Harinam. You know, you kill him with the glories of Krishna. And so that's the secret. We kill with kindness, with the blessing of the spiritual world. We bring Krishna to these ears that are deaf. We got to penetrate into dead stone. And so it's like, you know, not easy. But ultimately, the penetration will have its effect. And Krishna consciousness will rule the world. This is going to happen because our leaders, and as Prabhupada wanted, the ministers and the presidents chanting and attending Mangal Arti. Can you imagine? And now these presidents are getting Bhagavad Gita. Modi is giving Bhagavad Gita as gifts to different leaders in society. So it's happening in our time. So in the next course of 10, 15, 20 more years, we'll see dramatic changes in society. We'll see the effect of the chanting of the holy name around the world. So there's only one thing that we have to maintain, and that's our Krishna consciousness. That if we can expand within ourselves, in other words, take it more seriously as we develop. And I had one dream. I have many of Prabhupada dreams. He comes quite frequently. One dream was very funny, that I'm walking with Prabhupada by my hometown, by my house. And so I mentioned, Srila Prabhupada, this is where I was born. Tirtha. Now that's funny. Nobody laughed, but it was Tirtha. He made a joke. And so there's another dream that sticks out in my mind, is that Prabhupada came into my dream, and I was sleeping. He woke me up in a dream. And in the dream, he says, okay, now get serious about your spiritual life. Yeah, very important. Then he goes, and I wake up, I write all down what happened. I do that. I keep a record. And so I go back to sleep. Again, Prabhupada comes in a dream. He said, this time he's carrying a big, huge marble plaque. And it's written, inscribed, you know, chiseled into the marble in Latin. And he asked me, do you understand Latin? Yes, you know, Prabhupada, because I know Italian. What does it say? And big, huge, bright letters outlined in black on the white. Get serious about your spiritual life in Latin. I said, okay, I guess it's very clear. I get the message. Slowly it's coming through my thick skull. Then he's talking to somebody else. I mean, he's talking on one side, and there's somebody over here. And he should get serious about his spiritual life, shouldn't he? I look over, it's Prabhupada again. There's two Prabhupadas face to face looking at me. Get serious about your spiritual life. Now, I got very serious, and I turned around. My whole spiritual life changed, and I'm still trying to make sense of this whole thing. That what happened in that struggle for truth and beauty, because ultimately we're all struggling for that. We all want the truth. We want the highest knowledge. We want to know what these bodies are all about. Why are we in these bodies? What's happening to the world? Why there's so much misery? And the misery that is caused by the material energy is karma, of course. So there's a famous book, and we talked about it so many times. Some rabbi wrote a book, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. You know the book? So it was a big story, and it came off, it was big news years ago. But the reason behind it, why does a child die by an auto accident? Why are these miseries happening to good people? Like a child has no karma, you think. But there's a past life. And so the past life karmas, taking its effect. And so in our own life, all the stuff that goes by, all the stuff that the trials and tribulations that happen, is clearing the karma, clearing away so that we're open to spiritual life, so that we have a chance now to make it back home, back to Godhead in this life. That means no more birth, no more eyes to look at. I mean, there was a case that just read in the newspaper. Not a newspaper, it was on the face. Okay, what do we have that, you know, we have all these enjoyments. We have Facebook. You know, we have everything now. And so, in the news was some guy performed operations on all these ladies. And he blinded 24 different women by doing this cataract problem thing. And so these miseries are relegated from our time before. So previous life karma's shown as a result, even as a devotee. Now, some of these stories I didn't tell you, I've never told, but some devotional stories are really funny. I was working on a design for the samadhi. It happened the samadhi went into, plunged into stagnation for years, nothing. For 5 years, there was no effect on the samadhi. It was just dormant. Because Sarab, who was the architect, and I worked with him, and we worked out a system. He designed things, and I built it, or I helped in the engineering of it. And so all the things on the roof in the samadhi were done one by one. He had 10 people around each one of these guys, and they all came from Jaipur. And it cost, you know, a huge amount of money to make one of them. I said, Sarab, look, I can make a mold, and we can pump them out. I can do 20 at a time by myself. No, let the Indians do it. So I did it myself anyway. I made a rubber mold. The first rubber was heated, and it burst into flames. We had a big fire, you know, the first batch of rubber. And so the second batch worked, and I made the mold. I pumped them out 20 at a time. Those were done that way. Instead of piecing all together in plaster, it was all done in fiberglass. Now, casting, it's done in POP, but the stalactites coming down, they're made in fiberglass. Okay, so we're making a design for the samadhi, and I'm designing the dome. I'm working down in the basement in the guest house. I had an underground basement. It was just empty storage, and we had to clean out the snakes and the cockroaches and the rats and everything else that were down there. But they kept showing up. You know, I had a little friend, one little rat that was always there. And so he sat up on the edge by the windows. There's small little windows, which are street level. Okay, so on one occasion, I'm working on tracing paper. And tracing paper is very thin, you know, just, and if you get one drop of, you know, moisture on it, ultimately, you got to start over again. Okay, so I'm working on this tracing paper drawing of the dome, this dome. And so I'm working on it, and suddenly the water's building up outside because there's torrent rain coming down, and the pump didn't work. That alleviates the accumulation of water around the guest house. And the water is going up, and so it's over the windows. And suddenly I looked over this rat, and this rat looked at me, and he jumped over my head. And just then the window broke open, and all that water pouring in like Niagara Falls. I'm working on this little tracing paper, and I'm thinking, now, this is divine justice. If I can do this drawing with the torrents of rain, I mean, it's pouring in. And then the other window broke open, and that was pouring in. And then down the stairs, it was like a waterfall. It was very beautiful, coming down the water, down the steps. You know, so the place was filling up with water. Luckily, it was slope, so like the water couldn't get to me. And finally, I boarded up the entrance and closed it and nailed down the windows, and I finished the drawing. I had to start over again, of course. In any case, then I was starting to make, I'm telling these stories of what it was like as a devotee. Now, miseries come in different packages. And so miseries of spiritual life, of course, it's absolute, but miserable anyway. So I was assigned to make the murti, the bronzes that are upstairs in the samadhi. There's 8 Gurvastikam prayers, each one a particular pastime. the pastime of Srila Prabhupada. And so I started, and it was like just Prabhupada and Hef, and it was a team of devotees at that time, after Sarab left, and it came down to a team. And I did a poster called Samadhi Now to raise interest and to begin to start the Samadhi, finish the construction, because it was empty. A lot of buildings just, it was in dormant condition. And so that Samadhi Now is Prabhupada holding rows and looking at us, when you're going to finish it. And so I went to America, and first time I talked about it, Tamal Krishnan was there. And so he said, well, listen, he gave a very good advice. He said, whatever happened in the past, build a platform over it and start fresh. So I did that. You know, we came back, and it turned over to another devotee. I was in charge of both samadhis at that time. And then it turned over to another person, another devotee, took the reins. Okay, so I gathered 5 lakhs in Bombay. A couple of devotees were collecting. Dadi Bhaksha was one of them, and Lokanath's brother, cousin brother, he also. They collected the money. And the money ended up in a samadhi account. Now, that money, that 5 lakhs, was meant to do the bronze sculptures that are upstairs. And so the first thing that happened, he took the guy in charge, this devotee, took the 5 lakhs and bought a car. And so he drove around with his family, and that was the way the money went. And I asked him for money to do the first figure. It had to be done, you know. He says, I'm in charge now, and so the money will be given as I see fit, and that's nothing for you. And if you want, after you make the first one in bronze, then we'll see about some money then. And he kept looking at us, and we tried our best to make something happen in bronze, and it was just impossible. So finally I get the idea to call some experts. And so we get 2 of the top experts in India that know bronze casting and lost wax system, which is, it's a lost art. And so what happened, when these 2 experts came, they showed us a brand new way to do the job. And so we started doing this work, and it came out really nice. It was a new system. And so the first ones that were, we did our first casting, and what happened, you know, we had an asbestos suit, we had these big, heavy, huge instruments for doing the pour, and it was just a joke. And they belong in a museum now. And so the guys who actually did the pour were in gumshoes, barefooted. That's it, nothing but a gumshoe on. And so there was a camp here at that time, and the top bronze casters in India were all here because they were in this camp, sculptors. And so they looked at the system we were doing, and they saw the pour, the first one that was poured out. And so they took wet sand and put it around the mold where you pour into the vacant space. And so when they put that white hot crucible right on the wet sand, this is going to go off, this is going to explode. And so I hid behind a building. And so it didn't, you know, just it was, it poured. So we opened up the first mold. It was absolutely perfect. The detailing is 100% perfect. Now, if you go upstairs and you look at those panels now, you'll see that ultimately the detail is so beautifully done. It was all done, it was all preserved by this new system in lost wax. Okay, I had all the panels finished. The same devotee said, okay, we're not putting them in the samadhi. I'm sorry, we don't like it. I said, okay. After all of that, they didn't want to put them in. And so I said, okay, I'll take them to Bombay and I'll sell them. I did that. I packed it all into a train, and the train stopped for about 10 minutes. And we packed in the panels, and the panel, there's a way to whole show the panel, display panel. And I got into the train, took it to Bombay, had to show. I sent word back that I'm getting 5 crores for these panels. I got a telephone call. No, don't sell them. Don't sell them. Bring them back. We'll put them in. So by the time I got back here, there was a meeting between 5 of our leaders and my wife. And so we had just, at that time, there was an incident that took place, and one bridge boss who was shot and murdered in the guest house. And so he had three girls. So before he died on the way to Bombay, or on the way to Delhi, he says, "You have three girls." He told my wife, "You take one of them." Okay, so we did. We adopted one of them, and she was a year old at that time. So we have that little girl, and she was taking the girl to the meeting where these five leaders were. And so as soon as she got in, I went along just to see what the meeting was about. So suddenly we got into the room, and she started crying and, I mean, blazing away with, you know. Now, we found out the girl code has a system for the ladies, if the child gets out of hand, the thing you do, you lock them in the bathroom. Oh, they can't stand that. A kid will go nuts, and she'll scream, put on earplugs, let it take its place. But ultimately, it stops, and then they come out, and they're fine. And if that doesn't work, you take them, put them in a big, huge vaulty of water. And I used to do that. I'd set her right in the water, you know, and she stopped crying. And so if that doesn't work, then there's nothing you can do. So in any case, we get into the room. And that room was filled with these very high-level senior devotees, all God brothers, and who were, and anyway, what happened, they decided that they wanted to take control of these two things my wife was involved with. We had 70 workers doing Makut business at that time. And she was like the Makut queen, and making outfits for the whole movement, and giving the profit was a little bit of extra for our own deities. So we had every year four brand new deity outfits through that energy. And so they wanted to take that over. So they shut it down. Within 2 weeks, it was gone. It got dispersed. Then my wife was selling saris in big, huge numbers, and the money was going to the Gurukul, just blindly handing it over to the management. And so they stopped that. They took over the sari stock, and they gave all that, went to the downtown Wallace, so they knew what saris were selling, and they built up a whole empire in sari business. And so that stopped that income. And so I says, you know, you guys are taking a reaction for this, you know, and you're certainly going to be feeling the pain of this. So within 2 months, they were all gone. They all got left, kicked out of Vrindavan. And so one thing you don't do, you don't curse or you don't make it difficult for our fellow devotees, because ultimately we're here together taking that bath. And so if we're honest with ourselves that we're on the bottom, the sannyas means he's a servant, and he's the person who is like serving out at prasadam time. He doesn't take high worship. He doesn't get on the big seat. And so humility is the badge for every devotee. And so that emblem is there for all of us to emanate. And there are great souls like that. Vishnujan, Tamo was like that. He had a good side. I mean, I saw it. He was heavy, and he did the most, and ultimately Prabhupada used him like all the time. Where's Tamal? So that energy should be there for all of us, that ultimately we become very humble and serious in our devotional life. And so that way we have a very easy pathway back home, back to Godhead. So that tells a story. Any questions? Anybody got anything to add to the miseries of material life? Their own experiences? What you got? There you go. You got a microphone? It's here. Yeah, wait for the microphone. Not working? Oh. That's a good idea. The way to stop a child from screaming, he's saying, hold a kid up to the front of a mirror. Then what? It stops? They look at themselves screaming and they... anybody else got any suggestions? Anyway, this Prabhupada talked about material life being dunked into the water until you can't breathe. There's a dunking chair that was very famous in the Middle Ages in Europe. They do that to people. They dunk them in this chair and then bring them out. So if you're underwater and you can't breathe, I mean, you're screaming for help, and ultimately that's one of the reasons why. I'll just close with there's a couple more things here. Now most people, you got any more? Any more stories? Okay. Okay, Prabhupada just saying no sane man in society would try to make happiness out of this material existence. And so people do, of course. They try every way they can, and it doesn't amount to much. I mean, I just one more point. I'm trying to find it. Okay, so Prabhupada talked about different people trying to enjoy the material world. And this hit me like a ton of bricks. So he said, we have these sufferers, you know the story, the sufferers, he was referring to the surfers, in California and Hawaii. And so he says, well, what are they, these sufferers? And so surfers, yeah, and everybody cracked up because they're doing something that will give them a better birth. They will take birth as a fish, definitely. And so those people who want animal birth and who like to be snakes, they will become snakes. And there was one devotee, when they were talking, he was preaching in one college. And so one of the students said, what's wrong with being a dog? Oh, so you want to be a dog? He said, oh, you have my blessings. Now that devotee, he could have been a devotee, but ultimately he became a dog. So let's not be dogs in spiritual life. Let's be devotees and help each other along the pathway back home, back to Godhead. Not make obstacles. And I present all these stories as an instrument of what I had to go through. And so now it's easy. I mean, being a devotee now, it's just wonderful, you know. Everything is provided. You got a wonderful prasadam waiting out in the next room. And so everything is just nice service, chanting, dancing, be happy. We dance our way back home, back to Godhead. And you can eat. Now there's desire trees in the spiritual world. And I mentioned this the other night. Prabhupada said that on the desire tree, it's not just fruit. You get pakoras, you get samosa, you get halaba. Give me some halaba, and you have your halaba. And so, let's see what offer is in the prasadam room. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, go Premanandi, Hare Bo.